now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, the subject matter is deception, and I touched on this a bit last week. I will do a follow-up now about the aftermath, the ongoing aftermath of Manchester, the bombing, the real bombing, and now we're starting to see some of this deception bearing fruit, and I'll get into that, because now Newsweek and some of the major media has chimed in about fake news being spewed out by people claiming that some of these terrorist incidents, so-called, are hoaxed, false flag events. People have to differentiate between what's a false flag and what's a hoax, right? That's another thing. People need to get their terminology straight. And I'm going to talk a bit about how the deception works and how certain segments of the truth population, truther community, if you want to call it that, are psychologically profiled. They know that there's going to be a certain amount of people that fall into a particular psychological profile. Thanks once again to our very switched on listeners and our friends and colleagues out and about. We found out more information relative to Manchester. One of our switched on listeners had pointed out that the Manchester Fire Department was prevented from getting to the Manchester Arena where they could have saved lives. It seems that some of the bodies of the slain, as well as some of the severely wounded, had already been moved before the firefighters, ambulances, and first responders got there. We've seen this before. The first responders, the relief columns, the provisions being brought into the affected areas after Katrina. Actually, it wasn't so much Hurricane Katrina. It was the blowing up of the locks that allowed all the floodwaters to swamp the lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans, Louisiana, and all the hell that ensued from there. The powers that be prevented relief supplies, convoys, to be brought in, okay? And so we see a similar thing, although on a smaller scale, at Manchester, where, once again, these people that could have come there to help have been prevented from doing so. And we're learning more about the suspected bomber. It turns out, surprise, surprise, he was an asset of, take your pick, MI5, MI6, both. He was of Libyan descent. He was born in England, and then, like many people in Manchester or Muslim or North African descent, people don't realize this, but Gaddafi is was a Bedouin when he was not a Muslim. And so the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group was basically working for MI5 and MI6, and David Shaler, the former MI5 officer who went public some years ago, talked about how these rebels, these jihadists, were utilized by British intelligence to try to ouster Gaddafi, assassinate Gaddafi, even back then, right? And Gaddafi, for such a long time, the Libyan regime, for such a long time, has been scapegoated. You go back to Ronald Bonzo Reagan calling Gaddafi a mad dog, remember that? So much of that was false flag, so much of that was geared up towards inculcating in the minds of the public, the people, that Gaddafi was a madman, supported terrorism, etc., etc. So, just as with the case with the Afghan legions, the Arab legions, recruiting all these Muslims to fight against the Soviet infidel in Afghanistan, and then afterwards, how that database, the Al-Qaeda database, was used as the scapegoat for 9/11, right? Well, we saw a similar dynamic with the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group being used as a proxy force by British intelligence, the CIA, to destabilize Gaddafi's regime. Many English men, many natural-born, native-born English of Libyan descent and North African Muslim descent who happened to be English by birth, they were born in England, and many of them right there in the Manchester area, they were recruited. They were recruited by MI5 and passed on to MI6, sent off to Libya, and also, in some cases, to Syria. It turns out this kid who's been scapegoated, who's been posthumously patsied as the suicide bomber of Manchester, he apparently was also in Syria trying to destabilize that regime. So British intelligence has had their hooks not only on this kid, this dead kid, but they've arrested his brother, and it turns out the kid's father was a British intelligence asset, where they were supposedly there were dissidents, there were anti-Gaddafi dissidents going way back, you know, some time now, and they just changed the screenplay, put it that way. We saw a similar thing with the guy, the woo-woo terrorist who supposedly held hostages at the Lindt Cafe in Sydney, Australia, Martin Place. That was completely fake. That guy first came over as an Iranian dissident because Iranians and Iran are bad guys, right? So they always make a point of bringing in these dissidents, Libyan dissidents, Iranian dissidents. Doesn't matter, whatever country they want to destabilize, they bring in these so-called dissidents. Well, when this guy first showed up years ago in Australia, he was a dissident, hailed as a good guy, because he's speaking out about the evil Iranian regime. And then they just change the screenplay, right? They do a rewrite, and next thing you know, he manifests as this woo-woo terrorist who took hostages in that cafe in Sydney, Australia. Completely fake, right? And we're also seeing another dynamic play out. A lot of the things we talked about last week, a lot of what my switched on listeners have been talking about and passing info and whatnot, it's all starting to play out, folks. It's really interesting to watch this dynamic at work, because we talked about the possibility of this being a hybrid event where they intentionally put out a stream of fake photos and crisis actors, and they let leak out that all these drills were taking place in the weeks leading up to Manchester, and then the terrorist attack happens, the false flag terrorist attack. But because they've circulated so many pictures that suggest it was another hoax, right? Because all these people in the truth community, their egos activated and their egos and personas, their online personas, invested in believing that these are all hoaxes. Talk about mental inflexibility. Well, the bait and switch has occurred. The bait and switch. What do I mean by that? Well, like I said, there's breadcrumb trail of clues have been, you know, set aside for all these truthers all these years. One hoaxed event, and I'm falling into that pattern myself, that trap myself. One hoaxed event after another, clearly hoaxed, right? Now, what they've done is they've done the classic bait and switch where they've really killed people. They may have killed people in some of these other hoaxed events. We'll never know for sure. But in this occasion, in Manchester, they really did kill people. And now they've pulled the bait and switch. And it's interesting how it's playing out. We saw the progression of the fake news meme. They have been using the fake news meme against issues that are near and dear to us, that we know are real. How they flip-flop Pizzagate, where we know pedophilia is real. We know these perps in the Democratic Party around John Podesta, people like that. We know that there's a pedophile element amongst them. But what they did with the fake news meme was they say, oh, look, this is the alternative news media, all these bloggers, all these internet people saying these guys are a bunch of pedophiles and these women are a bunch of pedophiles, but really they're not. They're targeting and blaming these innocent people. And, oh, look, this crazed person went to this pizza parlor with the intention of wreaking all this vengeance, right? And that was all played out in the media, completely fake, because if someone showed up with a cardboard cutout that vaguely resembled a gun, he would have been wiped out by the police, right? Because they would have been so threatened by the cardboard cutout looking like a gun. But instead, this guy goes in there into this pizza parlor, waves a gun around, and then he goes out, and then he's arrested, yada, yada, yada. Fake, right? But the way the media spun it out was, this all came about, this potential act of violence and mayhem only came about because of quote-unquote fake news. And then we're thankful to the police for defusing the situation, blah, 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 quack, quack, quack. Now, fast forward to Manchester. Interesting, okay? Because we know pedophilia is real. We know that there are humongous satanic pedophile rings all over the place, which is to the highest level of government, industry, high finance, the military, etc., etc. But they do this bait and switch with Pizzagate, and how that was just a whole psyop. We know it's real. We know pedophilia is real. We know that some of these pizza parlors have probably been used by pedophile rings in D.C. and other places. But the way the spin control is, it's all just fake news. Look what they've done in Manchester now. Newsweek has come out with an article saying that AJ, Alex Jones, is saying that the victims at Manchester were just a bunch of, quote, trendies, which is a term that AJ likes to use. And I haven't actually watched the video where AJ is going off on that rant about how the victims at the Manchester arena were just trendies, when in actual fact, we know that there many of them were young people, young girls, children even. So even if AJ didn't say these things, right, even if it's just media manipulation, spin control, it reflects badly on everyone who's a private investigator in this field, right, of uncovering truth and finding out what the hell is really going on. So Newsweek has come out and run with the story, and it's interesting that they're playing up the hoaxed aspect to it. Let me read you some paragraphs from the Newsweek article. This is part of the bait and switch, folks. Jones has promoted ideas such as the United Nations plan to kill off 80% of the world population, actually more than that, and that the September 11, 2001 attacks were an inside job. We know that's true. He has claimed that the 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in which 20 children were killed, was a hoax. No, he didn't. Alex Jones, Paul Joseph Watson, and all that mob, they're going along with the official story that this Adam Lanza kid, all pilled up on pharmaceuticals, autistic, somehow barged into an empty school that hadn't even received the utility bill for years and killed these students that weren't there, right? Now, remember, Wolfgang Halbig was very public. Since then, Wolfgang has unfortunately had to go underground, went through a lot of harassment, getting sued, etc., etc. And Wolfgang was very vocal. With his background as a security expert, etc., he knew that Sandy Hook was a hoax. There was nobody killed there. Now, what's interesting is there was a tempest in a teapot that developed, because later on, Wolfgang Halbig was calling out Alex Jones for, I don't know what he called him, a shill, calling him, saying that it's curious why AJ is spewing out the official story of Sandy Hook, etc., etc. The bottom line is Alex Jones never said Sandy Hook was a hoax. He went along with the official story. But here in the Newsweek article, because they're tarring everybody with the same brush nowadays, right? The Newsweek article is saying Alex Jones is promoting Sandy Hook Elementary School as a hoax when he wasn't. He was promoting the official story. Get your facts straight again, Newsweek. It was Wolfgang Halbig that was very public about the fact that Sandy Hook was a hoax. There was no students there. There was no school there. The place hadn't gotten a utility bill in years. It was basically, what was the name that the Soviets had for those villages? It was a Potemkin village, basically. It was just a place that was used to make the whole system in Soviet Russia, the Soviet Union, look like an ideal workers' paradise. They take these vetted reporters from the West and show them how everybody was happy in a certain workers' paradise, these Potemkin villages, right? But they really didn't exist. The moment the reporters were gone, shown the door, then everyone was back to slavery and brutality and torture and everything else. Well, Sandy Hook was kind of a Potemkin village, right? But it must be understood, AJ was never amongst those people who said Sandy Hook was a hoax. He went along with the official story. Okay, let me continue this this article. Jones has promoted ideas such as the United Nations plans to kill off 80% of the world population. We know that's true. And that the September 11, 2001 attacks were an inside job. We know that's true. He has claimed that the 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in which 20 children were killed, was a hoax. No, he didn't. Article goes on to say, these sorts of false accounts can increase anger and confusion among survivors of the attack, experts say, right? Whoever these faceless experts are. Of course, that's the whole idea, the bait and switch. To piss off, pardon my Anunnaki, all these families, grieving family members of people who were really killed in these events, and then the media can point to all these bloggers and all these websites and people like AJ, right, and say, oh, he's saying that your grief and the loss of your loved ones isn't real. It's a hoax. Very clever. I give credit where credit is due. These people are so evil. They're so demented in their thinking that, like, normal people, I guess, would never even come up with these kinds of ideas. Okay, the article also says, quote, after these types of events, there will be individuals that will start posting that this didn't really happen, unquote, says Melissa Brimer, director of the Terrorism and Disaster Programs at the UCLA Duke National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, told Newsweek, quote, those kinds of stories are difficult for adolescents to understand and to navigate, like they really give a rat's ass about children anyway, right? But let me read that bit again from Newsweek. After these types of events, there will be individuals that will start posting that this didn't really happen, unquote, said Melissa Brimer, director of the Terrorism and Disaster Programs at the UCLA Duke National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, told Newsweek. Those kinds of stories are difficult for adolescents to understand and to navigate. And to complicate matters, right, they have a video clip of AJ going off on a rant. Apparently there's some kind of congressional representative that Alex Jones is pissed off at because apparently the congressional representative called AJ a Russian agent or a Russian spy. Look, AJ, you've been called a lot worse, all right? You've been called a Zionist shill, all right? So for AJ to go off on this, like, rant, freaking out because he's being accused of being a Russian spy, you and I, dear listeners, we know that's just nonsense. But, again, that clip from that rant of AJ's was included as part of this article, right? And we've seen other times, for example, when Alex Jones went on The View with those brain-dead women on that show, he made some very valid, cogent points, right? And he, for the most part, you know, kudos to him. He kept this cool and he made some key points. I didn't have any qualms about him getting all AJ on overdrive against Piers Morgan, that stupid moron Morgan, gun control freak, right? I had no qualms about that. In fact, I applauded it, and I was very, I made a point of applauding Alex Jones when he jumped all over Piers Morgan on my Facebook page, because, you know, someone's got to get in these guys' faces, right? So if he would have just kept it at that level, that would have been fine. I'm talking about, you know, how he was on The View and other shows. I don't care when he, in fact, I like it when he calls out people for being duplicitous scum. But for whatever reason, when he went off on this rant, profanity-laced rant against this congressperson, and I'm not a prude, I have no qualms about people using profanity. this guy Schiff that he was talking about sounds like a real bung munch, right? No telling what kind of weird, evil, sadistic crap, you know, this person gets into. Who knows? But what they've done is they've conflated Jones's non-support of the Sandy Hook hoax with him going off on this rant, wanting to physically assault this guy, okay, this congressperson, right? And then they lump it all together in these truthers, quote-unquote, are saying these things are all hoaxed and that they're totally callous and disregard the feelings of the families, yada, yada, yada. They don't give a rat's ass about the families. They don't give a rat's ass about the children. If they did, they would not be, you know, publicly mocking these people who go public about vaccine damage to children. And, you know, they wouldn't be going after people who expose these pedophile rings, of course. You know, there I go, trying to inject logic into this again. But the bottom line is that now, it's like when you go to InfoWars, it's like a smorgasbord. They're even feeling sorry for Sean Hannity because Sean Hannity may be getting fired because Hannity spoke out about the Seth Richard conspiracy, how he wound up dead after leaking out those DNC emails, etc., etc. Who cares about Sean Hannity? He's been shilling for this fake war on terror for decades now. Who cares about him? He's not a spokesman for truth. So what InfoWars should do is they should just keep their eyes on the prize, i.e. waking people up to this mass deception and stop playing this whole fake left-right paradigm, which it's ironic because Alex Jones is one of the ones who popularized the term, you know, false left-right paradigm, right? And because they're emotionally invested in Trump, this is going to be a topic for a whole nother discussion. But and I touched this on this on other commentaries. But man, the way they're talking about impeachment on Trump, this and that, and collusion with Russia, they're stoking the flames of civil war in the U.S. And I didn't read the article, but apparently someone on Congress, like a Democrat, had threatened a Republican in Congress and threatened to, like, do them bodily harm right there in Congress. That's shades of what happened prior to the American Civil War, where a pro-slavery Democrat, you know, attacked with his walking cane some Republican, abolitionist Republican. Interesting how everything is flip-flop. People think the Democrats are for the blacks. Actually, back in the Civil War period, they were pro-slavery. But again, you know, history and truth doesn't matter anymore to most people. I will post a link on this commentary subpage on the Cosmic Switchboard website from RT News. They did a good segment about the background of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, how apparently this boy became radicalized, etc., etc. They got some know-it-all, know-nothing expert there talking about how this is all blowback, complete nonsense. The term blowback has been so misused, intentionally misused, by the spinmeisters, by the corporate media, by limited hangout shills, right? The ones who still cling on to the 9/11 was done by a bunch of hijackers armed with, what was it, butter knives? It was box cutters, that's it. The people that still cling on to that idea are often the ones blowing smoke about blowback, which is an old term describing how some kind of operation, covert or otherwise, days, weeks, months, years down the track, backfires, right? There's nothing blowback about any of this false flag terrorism. It's not all these woo. The only bad Muslims running around are the ones that are turned loose from, you know, the immigration departments to run riot and run amok in all these Western countries, besides all the MI6, MI5, CIA recruited radical Muslims who've been brainwashed in the Sharia schools and brainwashed in some of these terrorist training camps, right? And So the blowback excuse has been used for a long time. And anyway, if you overlook the fact that the guy on RT is one of the blowback hypothesizers, the rest of his information is pretty good. Another point I wanted to discuss was the psychology of the so-called truthers who want to believe that all these events, all these false flag terrorism events, are hoaxes. Like I said before, these are people that have been psychologically profiled, and the powers that be knew that if they seeded the internet with certain pictures, these blatant crisis actors pretending to cry into mobile phones, etc., etc., that would take on a life of its own because their egos have been activated. A lot of people have tried to figure out the psychology of spies, okay? Actually been studies about the psychology of spies. What motivates spies? What makes them tick? Why do they do what they do? They found that there are certain ways that spy recruiters have entrapped people. Money. Sometimes people are just basically short of money. They've gotten into gambling debts, what have you. Sometimes they compromise them through blackmail, honey traps, etc. Sometimes spies get into it because of ideology, because they believe in something. Think of all the brainwashed communist spies of the 20s, 30s, 40s, and going on after that for many years. The Cambridge spy ring, for example, they believed in communism. And also ego. Ego is a big part of this. Spying game. Some people, some spies feel that if they decide to reveal the secrets of their own side, of the particular agency that they're working for, they feel that they're getting their psychological needs met. Perhaps they feel that they have not been recognized by the institution or agency they work for. Perhaps they feel they're not respected or appreciated or not being paid enough. This also ties into the money angle. And there's also a narcissistic element, perhaps, where some spy feels like, well, I'll spy and I'll pass on secrets from my own side because it proves I'm smarter than the spy agency or the intelligence agency or the institution I'm working for. They tell themselves that I'm invincible. I'm able to pull the wool over the people I'm working for. That makes me special. That makes me stronger. That makes me better. That makes me wiser than the agency that I'm betraying, right? And the point of relevance is this. These people that are out there claiming that this is all just a hoax, what they've done is they've been victimized by this bait-and-switch program, and now their egos have been activated. They've made an emotional investment into the whole concept of these are all just hoaxes, and for many of them, there's no going back. And what we see is a similar dynamic to the spy game, where ego is a big part of spy recruitment slash entrapment. And I've also seen elements of this in the intelligence community, where these people say, well, I can't tell you that because you're not cleared for it. You don't have a high enough security clearance. You don't have a need to know, right? I've seen this before. And I remember the status symbols that would come about through not only having a higher security clearance, but the little extra compartments that people were able to access, right? Not just TS, top secret, but SCI, sensitive compartmentalized information, and all the other different subcategories, right? There's a number of them. And yes, ego plays a big part of this. Status symbols, like secure telephone units, right? STUs. What these people would do is they come to our communications department, these people from operations or air training or some other department, right? And they go, oh, yeah, I need a stew phone, secure telephone unit, and these things could be synced up all the way to top secret. But it was really a status symbol. Maybe they need to have one classified discussion on the phone. See, when the line is non-secured in a military, government, intelligence-type setting, and by non-secured, it means unencrypted. So when someone calls in, you're obliged to say, in one form or another, you're speaking, be advised, you're speaking on a non-secure line, right? I used to blurt it out, ComNav AirPAC Staff Communications, there's a non-secure line, James speaking, can help you, right? When you say this is a non-secured line, you're reminding the other person not to just blurt out secret, sensitive information. And so what some of these people would do is they, and these could be officers in some of these different departments, they demand to have a STU phone, secure telephone unit, a STU 3, I forget what it was called. And they would be able to talk to somebody else on a secure telephone unit, but they would have to be synced up, right? So you would have this underling trying to coordinate the incoming caller with the person at your command who has a secure telephone unit, and when they say go secure, they're supposed to do something at either end, both ends, to make the phone connection go secure, right? And it was very much like the cone of silence in friggin' the original Maxwell Smart Get Smart TV show. If you remember, Maxwell Smart, Agent 86, he would say, "Chief, I don't think we should be talking about this. There's a lot of people that can hear what we're talking about. We should use the cone of silence, right?" And then Chief would go, "Max, that thing never works. Chief, we really need to use the cone of silence." So they'd lower the cone of silence, and then they'd be sitting across a desk from each other, and then Max would go, "Well, Chief, Agent 44, when he was hiding in a toilet bowl, he said to me," right? And then Chief would go, "What? I can't hear you, Max. I can't hear you." And it would go on and on like that for like 5-10 minutes. Basically, the cone of silence was so effective that neither could hear each other, right? And every time I would see the Stu phones trying to be synced up with a guy at our base, our command, trying to be synced up with a guy in another command somewhere, right? That's what it reminded me of, because they could never get the Stu phones synced up in the first time around, right? You had the underling scurrying back and forth, you know, using another phone to call up the other command to speak to another underling and try to sync it up so, you know, the officers at both ends would sync up their phones and go secure at the same time. I thought it was hilarious, right? And who knows what they were talking about. I mean, was it really that secret? Was it like UFO-related information? I don't think so, right? Was it anything of that nature? It was probably something, yeah, you would probably consider secret, but I don't know. I just thought it was a joke, but it was all a status symbol, right? Oh, look at, you know, I have two phones on my desk. I have a regular phone that I talk to non-entities like you with, and then I have a STU, a STU phone, that I talk to other important people with. It was all a status symbol is what it was, right? And so there's a psychology behind this. There's this arrogance behind it. When people in the spy game say to themselves, "Well, I'm pulling one over on my side." An example of this would be someone like Robert Hansen, FBI counterintelligence guy, a complete narcissist, right? He thought that he was pulling a fast one on his own side. He was with FBI counterintelligence, if memory serves, and he passed along a lot of sensitive information. I read the book by the handler, the Soviet-era handler of Robert Hansen. Of course, he was only able to say so much in the book, but according to some sources, Robert Hansen leaked out information to the Soviets about the COG program, continuity of government. That's pretty sensitive stuff. That's pretty highly classified. That's like the doomsday protocol when everything is going to hell, like a huge comet is coming in, or like an alien invasion, or nuclear missile attack, how the government survives, right? Continuity of government, COG, COG. This has to do with a lot of the underground doomsday bunkers, underground bases. Raven Rock in the old days was pretty well known. Raven Rock, I think, in Pennsylvania was one of them. Site R, I think it was called. I think it was built right inside of a granite mountain. In theory, could sustain and survive ground-level thermonuclear explosions. I'm not so sure about that, because the heat and radiation were such that even if you were deep underground, some of these underground bases, and on the surface a missile strike had occurred with a thermonuclear weapon, it's quite possible that people, even pretty far underground, would get dry roasted because of the heat and radiation coming through, right? Even if it was lead-lined, I mean, you would still have problems. Anyway, so Robert Hansen was leaking out information about, among other things, continuity of government. He did leak the identities of a couple of spies that the Americans had recruited. Incidentally, spies that had already been identified by Aldrich Ames, a CIA, Soviet Europe intelligence guy. And so Robert Hansen was an egotist. He was a narcissist. He thought he could outsmart the Bureau. Oh, look what I'm doing. I'm outsmarting them. John Walker, Johnny Walker of the John Walker spy ring, was another guy, right? Was another guy that was a narcissist. He did it for money. The KGB paid him, right? He was a damaging spy because he was deeply involved in ciphers, codes. He not only provided the ciphers to the Soviets, which allowed them to tap into and decipher basically all these messages, these sensitive signals intelligence, but he also provided the actual manuals for the cryptologic encipherment machines, the ones that actually enciphered the messages. By turning over the manuals to the Soviets, the KGB, he was telling the Soviets how the internal logic of the encipherment machines, the machines that encrypted the messages, he was telling the Soviets the internal logic of how the machines worked. That's damaging. And a Soviet analyst had said, an actual Soviet guy, I take it back, said that if World War III had happened, they would have won because they were basically reading in real time all the sensitive communications. And John Walker was a submariner, right? A lot of people think that the American nuclear-powered nuclear missile submarines was their ace in the hole, that even if the Soviets had blasted the missile silos, there were still these submarines out there in the deep blue that were still going to wreak out mega retaliation. Well, maybe not if the Soviets were reading their highly classified message traffic. Granted, the submarines also communicate with through extremely low frequencies. They basically send an extremely low frequency burst through the Earth, through the Earth's core all the way out to the other side if need be, right? Flat earthers, put your hands to your ears, okay? And they don't really care, of course, if this extremely low frequency pulse transmission burst wipes out all the sea life underwater. That's beside the point, right? They want to be able to make sure they get the information back to their command center. But John Walker was another guy who did this for ego purposes. The KGB gave him a lot of money over the years. He was spying for 20 years. He got his other buddy, Jerry Wentworth, I think his name was, to spy. And even after Walker retired, Wentworth still had access to NSA information. He was also a cryptologic technician like John Walker. If memory serves, John Walker wasn't just a cryptologic technician. He had rank in the Navy. He was responsible for overseeing the cryptologic encipherment, decipherment, mostly the encipherment of secure messages, in large parts of the Navy, right? Particularly the naval part of it, the naval submarine part of it, right? So the point of relevance was John Walker was another guy with an ego complex. Oh, I could beat, my side. They don't know what I'm doing. I'm so smart, I'm outsmarting them. This is what's happened with these truthers who were victimized by this bait and switch with all these hoaxed crisis actor hoaxed events, with non-casualties, no real casualties, no real injured people. They fell for it hook, line, and sinker. They didn't realize that it was a deception, a psyop, that was literally years in the making. I mean, think it's been a few years now since these first hoaxed events started to manifest, right? Sandy Hook, Boston Marathon, Aurora. You know, they usually superimpose these upon drills, that kind of thing. And now, many years down the track, these people are so brainwashed into thinking that they're all hoaxes now. And now, look, the corporate media, the lamestream media, has jumped on the bandwagon. Oh, look at these people, these heartless, callous people who don't care about these innocent children that were killed, right? They're saying it's all a hoax. And, oh, look, Alex Jones, he's also saying these are a hoax. No, he's not. Alex Jones and InfoWars is all on board the ISIS did it, the Muslims did it, the immigrants did it bandwagon, because that's all pursuant to the whole, whether they realize it over there at InfoWars, the whole clash of civilizations meme, right? Alex Jones never said these things were hoaxes. He's called them false flags, but he's never been on the hoax bandwagon. He always wanted to play it safe, right? See, what they do, they leave all these different breadcrumbs. And just enough to, like, signal to noise to signal ratio to throw people off the track. For example, the drills during 9/11, the National Guard interceptors that were sent out over the Atlantic Ocean instead of intercepting the non-existent hijacked airliners. Because, like I said, I don't think there were any hijacked airliners. That was a psyop. They didn't need to complicate the operational scenario, right? Oh, all the blips in the FAA NORAD screens. That's just more chaff thrown to the wind. The term chaff comes from one of the earliest forms of electronic countermeasures. The Germans were known to, their radar utilized certain frequencies, right? A certain frequency bandwidth. So what the British did was they cut strips of lengths of tinfoil, aluminium, the proper term for it, in a certain width, so that when they dropped bales of this stuff out of their airplanes, it would thoroughly just discombobulate German radar. It would just get snow back, okay? So when you hear the term, they were dropping chaff, that's where the term came from. The original code name for, the dropping of bales of aluminum foil cut to a particular width was window. That was the code name for it. It was a top secret, one of the first examples of electronic countermeasures to foil German radar, right? And when there was all these Allied bomber streams, 8th Air Force and RAF Bomber Command, where they were bombing at night, 8th Air Force would bomb during the day, 15th Air Force from Italy and North, Italy, after they occupied Italy, would come up from the south, right, and hammer Germany day and night. It was Operation Point Blank, the day-night saturation bombing, mega war crime against the German civilians of World War II. They would drop all this aluminum foil cut in strips of a specific width in order to foil German radar. So that's where the term chaff, throwing chaff to the wind, comes from, right? So all this stuff, the blips on the FAA, NORAD radar screens, the drills, the fake blips inserted as part of these drills, as part of these exercises, the the drills and whatnot in the months and years leading up to 9/11. The fighter interceptors scrambled out to the ocean. The fake hijackers. All that was chaff thrown to the wind, right? Designed to lead all these private investigators off running in all these different directions, getting them to spin their wheels instead of focusing on what really happened, right? Because they're not going to complicate the operational scenario. All they're going to do is tell the lamestream public through the lamestream media what they want them to believe, and then for all the investigators out there, all the truthers, so-called, they're going to plant all these fake, phony leads and all these breadcrumb trails all over the place, right? And they will do this years in the making. They will do this over many, many months and years. And now we're seeing it bear fruit with the whole hoax thing. Because just like John Walker, just like Robert Hansen, and all these spies that were spying for egotistical purposes, oh, look at me, I'm smarter than, you know, the agency that I'm betraying, I'm smarter than the CIA, I'm smarter than the FBI, said Robert Hansen. Eventually they got him, you know, Hansen, people like him. You know, they're not going to go after the real spies like Henry Kissinger and Brzezinski and scum like them. No, they're going to throw the book at these people that are caught up in the surface-level spy game, right? But the point of relevance is these truthers that fell for the bait-and-switch, fell for the, oh, they're all hoaxes, they're saying the same thing, right? Oh, look at these hoaxes. And where are they getting this information from? A steady stream from the internet. So automatically it's controlled information. Right? Automatically, if they're plucking these pictures of crisis actors, you know, crying and screaming into mobile phones, if they're getting pictures of all these fake crisis actors, or they're real crisis actors, like in Boston, right, laying there with all this fake blood all over the place, someone is putting all that out on the internet. And what's happened over time is these truthers that are bought into they're all hoaxes meme, what they're saying is, just as John Walker and just as Robert Hansen said, but in their own way, they're saying, I'm smarter than the New World Order. I'm smarter than the Illuminati. Look, here's another, like, hoax that I've identified. I'm starting my own YouTube channel. I'm going to do a 15-minute video on these hoax events, on this particular hoax events. I've got a whole library catalog of all these videos of these other hoaxed events I've exposed. I'm smarter than a New World Order. I'm smarter than the Illuminati. That's what's happened. Most of these people don't even believe in aliens. They certainly don't even know or would believe in the reptilian overlordship. They're like surface-level truthers mired, ensnared in the 5 cents conspiracy. They are backwater. As far as I'm concerned, their opinions don't count. And here they are, thumping on their chest like Tarzan. Oh, I've outsmarted the New World Order. I've outsmarted the Illuminati. I've outsmarted the Bilderberg Group. And they've only really outsmarted themselves. Because they don't realize how their emotions have been played. They always will use events, real or contrived, that have a high emotional content, like Pizzagate, Pedogate, things that engage us emotionally. We know these, you know, pedophile satanic rings exist, and the very fact that they exist pisses us off no end, right? Because all these innocent people, especially children, are being harmed. We know that false flag terrorism events go on. We know that these terrorist groups, ISIS, what have you, are being controlled by black ops. We know that, those of us who've taken the time to get into this, right? To study all this stuff. So right off the bat, we're emotionally engaged, emotionally invested, because they keep pulling off these false flag terrorist attacks using these proxies, which they've controlled from the start, to take away our freedoms, take away our rights. We know that the fiat currency system, the monetized debt system, is a sham. That in itself is a hoax. We're all emotionally invested emotionally engaged in that because it impacts us at a very deep level. It impacts every single one of us who is not financially independent, right? So they're always going to utilize these events, these memes that have a high emotional content, okay? And they're also going to utilize the feel-good meme, too. You got to watch out for the feel-good meme. There's certain websites out there. Your Newswire is one of them. They're always putting out a stream of feel-good things, right? Of how this is being exposed, how that's being exposed, right? And how this person is speaking up about this particular controversial topic. And they put, your Newswire puts out enough valid stuff, or at least some valid stuff, parts of valid stuff, to make them believable. But again, why do feel-good memes, why do they have an effectiveness? Why do they work? Because there's an emotional investment. There's emotional content. There's emotional angle. It's something that emotionally hooks us. We want to believe this person's going out speaking about such and such. We want to believe that someone is exposing this, that, or the other, right? It hooks us. It engages us emotionally. So I'm not saying that we should get into Spock mode. Captain, are you able to respond after some guy in some other planet has done a beatdown on Captain Kirk, right? Are you able to respond, right? No, I'm not talking about being Mr. Spock, but I'm talking about the way a professional, not a mind-controlled, manipulated intelligence analyst, but a professional intelligence analyst. Each one of you out there is your own intelligence agency. My agency is called Baja DVRS. Let me explain. I used to have my very first podcast. I had my own intelligence agency called Baja DVRS. What that stands for is Bureau of Alien Human Affairs, Directorate 5, V is in a Roman numeral V, so it's DV, RS, Reptilian Section. So it's like Bureau of Alien Human Affairs, Directorate 5, Reptilian Section. It was just my way of, you know, like, it was satire, kind of. It's like, you know, all these people in the intelligence community, they're all thumping on their chest. Well, I have a higher security clearance than you. I have a Stu phone, you know, go secure, cone of silence, right? And it, when I called my particular podcast the, you know, Bureau of Alien Human Affairs, Reptilian Section, it was just a play on that. It was just to rub it in their faces. I make my podcast sound like an intelligence agency, right? But the point is, each one of you out there is your own intelligence agency. Each one of you out there is your own intelligence analyst. Each one of you out there is your own multidimensional quantum special operative, okay? So I bring these topics up just to kind of balance things out and show that how easy it is to fool these people who get emotionally invested, whose egos are activated, whose egos become ensnared, right? And then they lose focus. It's no longer about getting the information out, helping people, showing that, hey, this is all an illusion. We're all under manipulation. This is all a scam. Then it becomes, I fooled the New World Order. I fooled the Illuminati. They can't fool me with these hoaxed events. Oh, here's a picture of a girl crying into a mobile phone again. I fooled them. They didn't fool me. I fooled the wool over their eyes, right? What happens is they lose focus, and it becomes a narcissistic form of, you know, public self-adulation is what it is. And it should never be about that. It should never be about, oh, it's all about me. It's, you know, it's for the greater good. That's what should be going on. Always remember that. Think about the little kids in the old days, you know. They would, like, say something to you, like, I know something you don't know. I know something you don't know. And these people, I've seen this in the intelligence community too, folks. These are people that, they feel important because they're keeping secrets. They feel important because they know things. Oh, I'm feeling self-important because I know things. I'm in the intelligence community. I have a security clearance. I have to, like, punch a number into a cipher lock and go into a secure area. I know things. I'm feeling self-important because I'm keeping secrets, right? We see that all the time. That's what James Jesus Angleton, notorious CIA counterintelligence chief during the so-called Cold War. He was actually a Zionist flunky is what he was. But he used to always try to big shot Kim Philby, of all people. You know, Philby would ask him about something, and then Angleton would go, you're not cleared for that, and have this self-satisfied smirk, right? Philby used to always have lunch with them. They were both drinkers, so Philby and Jesus, James Jesus Angleton, Jim Angleton, who more than one establishment historian, by the way, has described as looking lizard-like or reptilian. They actually use that phrase, reptilian, in appearance. And go look up a picture of James Angleton, and you'll see what I mean. He does look like a reptile. Anyway, Angleton would try to big-shot Kim Philby, who was the MI6 head of station in Washington, D.C., during that time. And then Angleton would try to big shot Kim Philby. Oh, you're not cleared for that information. Blah, blah, blah. Quack, quack, quack. Little did Angleton know that Kim Philby was a longtime KGB mole, recruited when he was still in college, right? Part of the infamous Cambridge spy ring that was created and protected by MI5 officer Victor Rothschild, right? So that's an example, or people just outsmart themselves, basically. So I'm never going to put myself in a position where I think I know everything, because that would be an example of narcissistic self-indulgence. It's like I open my palm. What's in the palm of my hand is what I know, and all the space surrounding me is what I don't know. And I always remind myself of that. That's what keeps me focused, was to keep me humble. I've been so, like, humbled so many times in this life, folks, beat down, chastened, that I've learned the hard way to not lose focus and not allow myself to get pulled into all these phony intrigues. And while I'm at it, the last few minutes of this segment, there's so much infighting in the not only just the UFO field, but in the mind control survivor field, and all these different people out there that are doing similar work that I'm doing. It's like there's all this mudslinging at each other. You know, to paraphrase Rodney King, can't we all just get a Long Island iced tea and chill out, right? And, you know, this is what's going on all over the place. People just arguing and bickering and, you know, stop fighting each other. Start fighting the system that we're under. But do it from a place of heart-centered gratitude. Organic heart-centered gratitude. That you're actually in the fight. That divine source deemed you worthy of being here. So you can make a difference. So you can touch people's lives. So you can plant seeds. And many of them, you know, won't grow, but some will take root, and those seeds will have a beneficial impact, not just on this timeline, but in other timelines, in other dimensions, in other planes of reality. You're all powerful people out there, and don't forget it. Don't get caught up in all the petty squabbles. Ain't worth it, folks. Anyhow, we've reached the end of this week's Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, whatever you may be doing, please have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next time.